This is Access Houston on 97.9 The Box.
Yes, indeed, and good Sunday morning to you. I am your host, KG Smooth. I have in the studio with me Mr. Will Smith, not to be confused with the A-list actor who is married to Jada Pinkett Smith, but Houston's own Will Smith. Good morning, sir. How are you?
It's good. God is good. It's great to be here, and appreciate the opportunity to be on.
Just tell our listening audience a little bit about you, just a little background information about Will Smith.
It'd be a pleasure. From the area, born and raised in the area on Galveston Island, went to high school at Ball High School down in Galveston, Ireland, then ventured on to college at Sam Houston State University. So they call us BOI, Born on the Island, for those of us that grew up on Galveston Island. For about the last couple of decades, I've been involved in sports. My background is actually sports. I'm a sports journalist by education. Spent many years working with multiple media entities in the area, covering sports at the high school level, small college level, and so forth. Spent time at the Houston Chronicle covering sports in the area. In recent years, God has modified my path in life. Obviously, we know that we have some serious issues involving our youth and our young men of color. So God has re-guided my path, and I've been diligently working with efforts to try to correct some of these maladies and see if we can reinforce some of the things that we've done in the past and put some perspective in place to try to help turn things around.
Yeah, let's talk about that. You have a brilliant book called Decoding the Urban... How do you pronounce that?
Genome.
Yes. America's last chance to get young urban males job ready instead of crime ready. You know, I've always thought that the system needs to change because there seems to be no opportunities for young men of color these days. You know, they're taking out the after school programs. You know, these kids have nothing to do after school. And so what's left? The streets. They stay in the streets. They get into trouble. And then they get into the system, which is a lifelong stamp, you know, on your record. And is just... things need fixing here. So talk about a little bit about what the book is about.
Well, kind of to piggyback on some of the things that you brought about, the entire purpose of me writing this book was to bring a lot of the issues to the forefront that a lot of people may not really understand. Mm-hmm. For instance, you mentioned the fact that there doesn't appear to be a plethora of opportunities for these young men. That's not always the case. And what I want people to understand is that we have these issues that we have in place are a lot more complex than what they appear to be. There are a lot of socioeconomic issues at play. Obviously, there's been a paradigm shift in terms of how our homes are structured. Two-parent households, I think, add to a lot of these issues. We have some faltering with our schools, and we have a lot of other things out in our business community, for instance, such as the economic collapse that we had with our economy that set not only young urban males back, but structured, job-ready professional males mm-hmm. that have set those back. So a lot of the mentoring, a lot of the other challenges that we were able to circumvent in recent history, we're no longer in position to do that. But what the book does is the book tries to bring a lot of these issues to light and put into proper perspective of some of the things that we can do to perhaps turn some of these challenges around.
What are some of the things that you see? Because you're out here, you're in the field, you have a firsthand take as to the need of these young men. What is the major need with our young men of color?
Well, first and foremost, what I need to get everybody to understand, we have a full-fledged epidemic on our hands. Just to throw a few of the numbers at you, mm-hmm. 1 in 3 young men of color right now between the ages of 16 to 28 have some type of criminal infraction on their record, okay? 1 in 4 young men of color before the age of 30 will be incarcerated by the federal penitentiary at some point. 1 in 4. Those are devastating numbers.
Yeah.
So we have those issues right there. The other devastating issues that we have is that we have unemployment in our urban communities that is in excess of 45% in many of our urban communities. Think about that. Put that in perspective. If half of our young people between the ages of 16 to 28 are not getting these essential early life skills early, they're not developing future job skills. They're not understanding what it takes to become a working professional. So we have a lot of issues and challenges in place right now. And unfortunately, we just don't have the programs or the expertise to put the methodologies in place to overcome some of these challenges.
And so what can we do to overcome these challenges?
Well, in the book, what I try to do is I want people to understand what all the parameters are in terms of how the numbers, to have a clear understanding what the numbers were. So I talk about a lot of numbers, and these numbers are predicated on empirical data. As a credentialed workforce professional, I have access to a lot of information. So number one, I want people to understand the numbers. Number two, we've got to do a much better job, a much more thorough job of getting our business people, our politicians, our school administrators all on board to identify what the problems are before we can effectively put strategies in place to eradicate these issues. The problem is most people don't have a clear understanding what the problems are. We can't fix the problems unless we understand what they are. So what I've done in the book is I've laid out a lot of suggestions, put programs together, effective coaching to a lot of these young people from middle school on out. We don't have programs in our school to teach people. In my opinion, we need to be fortifying and equipping these young people with work-related skills from middle school out. The problem one of the major issues we have is that on average, if a young man or young woman has not gained any traction in the labor force by age 23, they have an 80% chance of faltering in life, which means that they're on a wayward path to becoming incarcerated.
Wow, that's astounding.
By 23, if they have not gained any traction in the American labor force, an 80% chance of becoming incarcerated.
So what can we do as a community to try to change this? I mean, should it start within, you know, our own community, community centers, maybe giving these young kids, you know, some sort of outlet to get into the workforce? Should schools be more involved or take some sort of stance so this won't happen to these kids as they get over and, you know, they get out of school and they get into real life? I mean,
KG, all of the above. Those are great points, and all of those points need to be emphasized. The problem is that, number one, it starts in the home.
Yeah.
When you have 74% of the homes urban homes in our area that are lacking both parents, and mainly they're lacking the leadership of a working urban male in those homes, then that's a problem right there on its own. Mm-hmm. These kids, a lot of these young men that I work with and I confront that are facing these challenges, they have no understanding what it's like to get themselves involved in the labor force. They've never been around a male that provided leadership skills or provided any source of direction as far as what they need to do to become successful in the American labor force. So it starts in the home. So obviously we have deficiencies in the home. Number two, we're not getting the essential skills structured in our schools. Our teachers teachers are great. I love our educators. However, our teachers don't have the skills and the expertise to teach these young people what they need to do in the labor force. Mm-hmm. Teachers teach. They don't have the expertise like a person like I do instilling the values of leadership from a work perspective into these young people. So that's the second problem. And then again, the third problem is a lack of communication. We don't have a lot of our politicians, a lot of our pastors, leading pastors in the area don't quite understand the problems. So until we get everybody on the same page, we're not going to be able to structure effective methodologies to move forward in trying to eradicate these challenges.
Oh, I mean, this conversation, you know, I have a lot here on the show and just, you know, with coworkers and other friends. Where do you think we fell off as a community? Because I know growing up, you know, as the old African proverb goes, it takes a village to raise a child. You know, I grew up in the 80s and as an adolescent in the 90s. And, you know, if I did something bad, which, I mean, I wasn't a bad kid, but I remember one particular time where, you know, with some friends and throwing eggs at cars and
things that we all did,
you know, and one of the neighbors, you know, they saw me, you know, doing that, like, oh, Christopher, I'm going to tell your mother, come over here. I got it from the neighbor. And then they told my mama, and then I got it from, you know, my mama as well, you know, in terms of the discipline. And so it was that whole neighborhood, like it takes a village to raise a child. The community was involved in that. Nowadays, not so much. You know, people are turning the other cheek. They're like, hey, not my child, not my problem. This is none of my business, as they sip their tea. I mean, where did we fall off as a community in continuing on that African proverb?
Well, the what you're referring to is what we call in the labor force parental reinforcement, or in the sociological realms of our universe, multi-layered parental reinforcement is what that's referred to. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if we're on, off course in our own households, we're not in position to offer leadership or additional help outside of our own households, because we're struggling and grappling just to try to maintain our own households. Now, the referencing the point, your initial question, where did we get off course? One of the things I do when I conduct my workshops around town, I bring up one of the most profound research, I guess you can call it, in my estimation, it's one of the most profound studies that's ever been done in the last century. Mm-hmm. The last century is the Monahan Report, done by Senator Patrick Monahan in 1965. Those in education or in social studies, a lot of people understand it. It was a profound study that President Kennedy in 1962 became very concerned about the state of African-American males in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So what he did was he structured a research to take a look at some of the challenges that he saw that the African-American community was grappling with. And to him, as well as Senator Patrick Monahan, these findings were disturbing. So for 2 years, Patrick Monahan worked on what's referred to as the Monahan Report. Every person in America needs to go and pull up the Monahan Report from 1965. In 1965, when the report was completed, all of the problems that we're dealing with right now, they were identified in 1965. We were off course already by then. The study indicated that we were off course since the Great Depression. We never made strides as a race from the Great Depression of the 30s.
Hmm.
So we saw deterioration of the homes. The study, which I have copies and I distribute copies and disseminate copies at every symposium that I do, these things were brought to the forefront at that time. However, they were never addressed.
Hmm.
Black leaders, to the most part, castigated the report because they thought that the findings were subjected to extreme prejudice. They didn't understand. This is not what the report was about. The report identified deficiencies in our home, in our social boundaries, and these problems were just never addressed. So now, 50 years later, those problems have only been exacerbated.
Mm-hmm.
If we would have started putting together structural remedies to confront those problems back in 1965, perhaps we would be in much better standing today. The book brings all of those challenges to the forefront. And again, I am again warning us as a community that we are not only off course, but we are in the midst of a full-fledged epidemic if we don't address these issues early from our formative, these young people from our formative years. I mean, right now, we can't even take our kids to a McDonald's, mm-hmm. because there's a chance that McDonald's may be robbed. We can't take our kids to a movie theater, or there's trepidation about, you know, danger getting into our cars. And what we're doing is we're, instead of trying to work together to take on these challenges, our first thought is it my neighborhood?
Mm-hmm.
You know, am I going to be impacted? But here's one prevailing warning that I have for everybody. Everybody in this city right now will be impacted by crime, and that crime over the next 24-month period, either themselves or someone they know will be subjected to a serious criminal offense, and it will be a male of color. There's an 85% chance it'll be a young male, man of color, between the ages of 16 and 28. And if we don't heed to these warnings, folks, we're only going to get ourselves into deeper trouble.
And to that point, hence the My Brother's Keeper initiative that President Barack Obama introduced last February. And you and I met at the MBK meeting a couple of weeks ago. And when I heard that the president was doing this, I thought to myself, you know, finally, I knew that he got it. But, you know, the fact that he's putting this in the forefront and making it a nationwide initiative for both, I mean, primarily, you know, young men of color, but, you know, young girls as well. But the need is with the boys. And so I was so, so proud when he brought this to the forefront. And you have already been doing the work. What were your thoughts when President Obama introduced this initiative?
Well, I've been championing this initiative for the past 8 years. I started writing Decoding the Urban Genome 8 years ago. I have been pushing diligently for sending information to Washington, sending information to area politicians, to area school administrators, feverishly trying to get this information out. So when I saw it and I read the you know what exactly what the what it was going to be entail, I was very happy. But at the same time, I was a little disappointed because, you know, we've got 2 years, essentially a working window of 2 years to try to push this or disseminate this effectively into our communities. I think once this administration is completed at this point, my concern is that we're not going to be doing anything else moving forward. So I think that we're running out of time. I wish this would have been something that the president would have structured or would have put into play earlier in the first 4 years. So my concern is that we might run out of time. And the other problem that I have is that there's no funding. There's no funding. There's no funding from any of the initiatives that are put in place. We're basically relying on the backs and sweat of established entities that are already out there working on these issues. But folks, there's already not enough resources out there. We don't have enough programs in place to address these issues. So without the proper funding and the economic mechanisms to support these initiatives, it could all be futile.
I guess I didn't really... I never thought about it that way, especially once he leaves office, because who knows, you know, who's going to get up in there. So we as a community, as a people, we have to keep this thing going. As you were speaking, I was thinking about what you said earlier about our young men not having any examples. You know, normally, you know, when you see someone like you that's doing something greater or something that you may aspire, you know, to become, and you see someone that looks like you, you have a better view on things. I think that you could probably believe that you can achieve whatever it is that, you know, one wants to achieve when you have examples like that. We don't have that with black men. I mean, yes, we have President Barack Obama. He's the first black president, and, you know, young men can say, wow, I actually can be the president. But that seems to be the only balance in terms of, you know, what is seen in the media and on television. You either have the, you know, the heathen thug that's doing all this thuggery, you know, and really that's just about it. I mean, society really doesn't give us that many options when it comes to positive figures of color.
Well, I didn't mean to cut you off, but no, I'm always ready to jump on that observation when I hear it, because here's the sad part. Although our problems at the bottom end and our maladies have been accentuated in recent decades, we now actually have more African-American males that are doing better now at this time than we have ever before. And that's in all sectors of society.
Mm-hmm.
As a labor force expert, I study the dynamics of the economy, as well as our, you know, our schools and educational components. So I provide labor markets for businesses. So when I present these challenges to businesses, I provide substantial labor market information that brings a lot of this information to light. And that's the sad part. We actually have just scores of success. And a lot of those, a lot of that success can be directly tied to our urban communities. Mm-hmm. But the sad part is that we deal with a lot of the crab syndrome when it comes to African-American males.
Yeah.
Our African-American males that have overcome and made significant strides either financially or professionally, a lot of them don't give back. A lot of them don't put themselves in position to provide those leadership tangibles that we're looking for and are begging for to bring back into our community. So that's an even sadder component to all of this that we're dealing with. So that's another thing that I do in my book. I'm challenging professional athletes. What I tell these professional athletes when they go out and they conduct their workshops, look, these kids are not all going to become professional athletes.
Right.
These kids are not going to all become movie stars or rap stars. We need to set up workshops that teach these kids and educate these kids about career opportunities, what they need to do to sharpen their skills to become effective in the labor force. However, that's been one of the biggest challenges that I've been able to overcome in my quest to help in these areas, that it's very difficult to get the average African-American male that has ascertained some modicum of success to give back.
Why do you think that is? Is it because they themselves haven't been schooled right, or don't get the concept of that it is important to give back, or that selfish thing like, oh, well, I made it, so let me just focus on mine and, you know, my family and, you know, because that's all that matters to me. I made it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, that's you hit on all of the points. Again, as a Christian, I always ask myself, always ask people that I encounter that express the same Christian values. And one of the things I always bring to light is that, you know, obviously, you know, we all want to be the best people that we possibly can. But Christianity is not predicated on you just maintaining your goodness and your values and just include only just your family or those people close to you in your circle. The question that's most paramount is, what are you doing for strangers and people that you don't know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the profound question in all of this. What are you doing outside that circle? You know, most of us consider ourselves to be good people if we are taking care, as you alluded to, taking care of our own homes, taking care of our own kids. But we need those efforts to go beyond that. We need heightened efforts to be in play in order to eradicate these and confront these challenges. So that's a great question. You know, and it's one of the questions that I keep putting out there every time that I'm out and working in these communities.
Well, we've got a tremendous fight ahead of us still. I grew up on the motto of each one teach one, you know. And to all of my young professionals out there that are listening, teach these kids. If you see a young man that you see the potential in him, you know, go up to them and lead the way. Because, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, I mean, they really are our future. And if we don't step up as, you know, young adults and the elders to teach these young kids, I mean, it's just going to continue to go down. And then we are going to look back and say, man, or I wish I would have done more. So you can do something right now. You know, just look at that kid in that neighborhood that you see the potential, or whoever it may be. I mean, just we need to have that positive reinforcement within ourselves instead of always, you know, hating on each other or down talking or, you know, all of that. I never I used to get teased growing up because I spoke proper car. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, it used to be so funny. You know, even some of my mom's friends, you know, they would call me, you know, the professor because, you know, they said I spoke well and all of that. But that was because my grandmother wasn't having none of that nonsense. And she taught us the right way. And there were other people that were in the neighborhood, in the community, that were doing positive things that I could say, well, hey, I don't have to go this route. You know, I had friends that were, you know, out doing things in the streets, be it, you know, selling drugs or just, you know, just being a knucklehead, period. But, you know, my first bout in jail, I was like, no, this isn't for me. can't do that. So we got to reach out and each one teach one, I believe. Yes. Where can your book be available to those that are listening that want to get Decoding the Urban Genome?
Well, I'm out and about, so I'm always, when I'm out conducting seminars and some symposiums and workshops, so the book is always available when I'm out and about. People can go to my website, which is www.urbanworkforceinitiatives.org. Again, that's www.urbanworkforceinitiatives.org. The book is also available in several area bookstores. It is the Book Nook in Sugar Land. It's on Highway 90 in Sugar Land. Again, the Book Nook, that's in Sugar Land and on Highway 90 and just off of Highway 6 in Sugar Land. I also have a couple other bookstores that are, I will be doing some book signings, so I'll get that information out into the website, that they'll also be carrying the book. So we're working to try to push the book into more bookstores, more mainstream bookstores, so I'm working diligently to get that moved along. Again, directly, it's also available on Amazon. So you can go to Amazon and just Google Decoding the Urban Genome, and the book will come up.
All right, Mr. Will Smith, the urban workforce strategist, program facilitator, and author of Decoding the Urban Genome. Thank you for stopping by Access Houston, sir. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, and God bless you for all the great work that you do in our community.
Well, thank you. You are listening to Access Houston on 97.9 The Box.
We'll be back with more Access Houston on 97.9 The Box.